Welcome to the OpenIC, the investment committee in your pocket. In this show, we talk to M&A and strategy leaders that want to make a dent in the world and combine success with freedom. My name is Tobi Liebsch. Today, I'm talking to Valentin Rivas Vera. Valentin is the director of strategy at Lyntia, where they're taking quite a different approach to building their strategy team. It's more like a fast-paced startup than a traditional consultancy-heavy department. So let's jump right in. All right, Valentin, thanks so much for joining us. You are the director of strategy at Lyntia, and on their LinkedIn, Lyntia says, "We are a neutral telecommunication services operator in the wholesale market." Valentin, can you explain, just for ordinary people, what Lyntia actually does?
So we are a telecom infrastructure player. Basically, we manage fiber, dark fiber and capacity services, which is the highways of data that are used by the telecom firms and technological such as Amazon, Facebook, and so on to, you know, manage it. That this call goes from your computer to my computer and so on.
Well, I suppose it's been a very busy year for you. So you're director of strategy. Can you just walk me with very quickly, what are your responsibilities and what does the team look like?
Okay, so we are an internal strategy team. We come from a management consulting background. We are in charge of basically everything, you know. Strategy is a high word, but basically the most relevant decisions of the company in terms of both organic and inorganic growth. I would say we cover M&A and key strategic initiatives, such as, you know, like opening up key new products, new markets, and so on. We do the analytical legwork and support for the decision-making at the C and board level.
What does your team look like? What kind of set of people do you have with what kind of skill sets?
So basically, the team is composed by the chief strategy officer, which I report to, who is a former partner of Bain & Company, a key strategic advisor coming from principal BCG as well, and several analysts which come from, you know, backgrounds at the consulting. And yeah, that's the basic skill set, I would say, the traditional analytical plus presenting a skill set that you would find in any management consulting firm.
Mm-hmm. Really like an in-house consultancy almost.
Yeah, in-house consulting, I would say.
Yeah. We work with several analysts on your team. If you hired an analyst, and I'm sure you fired a lot of analysts in your career, what are you looking for in a great analyst?
What am I looking for in a great analyst? I just had a great conversation with a freelancer, which is managing a project right now today. He told me, man, at this point, like critical thinking. Okay, no. So what are we looking for? Obviously, coming like my background, being in management consulting, I'm looking for the classical analytical capacity, a lot of, you know, eagerness to learn and to work hard to understand the core problems and also the ability to communicate. So at the end of the day, this is all about understanding the question, being able to gather the information, do the analysis that can lead to a better decision, right? So I would say that from analytical to the communication process, that's the key skill set that you're going to be looking for in an analyst.
And how much do you already require industry background, Valentin, when you hire a freelancer versus when you hire someone for full-time? So how much do they need to know the infrastructure to communication?
So I think, first of all, and this is an interesting thing because we were discussing about analysts, and my experience hiring analysts hasn't been that great. So I've been working with a lot of freelancers on a more senior level. You're going to find very few junior people because they're still going through, you know, learning to the basic skill set that we set. And even though we do some of that teaching ourselves. Coming back to your question, Murray, you said what are we looking for in a freelancer? How relevant industry expertise is? And I see here two key buckets when I'm working with freelancers, and it depends also on the sort of project we're working on. Like, it depends on, hey, am I looking for an expert in the industry that is going to come help us understand something that is something we are not aware of, and so on. So mm-hmm. We're going to be looking for people with operational experience. And I think this is one of the great opportunities that platforms provide, because you get to meet, to identify experts in a way that some years ago was impossible. And actually, that's one of the role that probably big consulting firms could do. That's one, you know, one bucket, like the expert. Right, the expert on this specific thing. And then there is the other one that I think is also becoming more and more relevant as more people choose this, and is the expert in the process. Like somebody that can scale our capabilities on demand. Okay, let's say we have a a couple of projects going on, then an important transaction on the horizon, and we need somebody that knows his shit. Probably not about the industry precisely, but you know, that he's done it before. He knows the, you know, again, the skill set, the basic project management, the understanding of, you know, what are the key questions for diligence and so on. And these are two very different profiles, both covered by freelancers. I believe that for the second, we're looking more of a person that has experience. And for us, it's going to be experience at a top management consulting firm that he's done it before, probably at this manager level. And that he's decided that, you know, because of his career, probably he chooses to be a freelancer, probably he's in between jobs and he can join right away and he's going to be, you know, be able to be put in production within days.
But if I understand correctly, that means, so on the one hand, it's the expert and the other hand is on the processes. What about the whole hands-on work like financial modeling and actually...
The way I see it for us is, yeah, industry experts, which many times we need to support with people that have the analytical toolkit. Okay. But, you know, these guys have probably been working for 20 years at a key company that did something in the area that we're exploring and, you know, he has his contacts, but that's a sort of freelancer, which I think probably more traditional sort of freelancer you've found in several industries for some time now. And then the other is much more of a, you know, solo writer, comes from a consulting firm, he's done his time, but still has his toolkit and his financial modeling. He has the obvious ability to understand an industry, to perform a proper interview and to deliver a proper package or output in terms of whether it's a document or whether it's a presentation for a board or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, architects and carpenters. You mentioned something very interesting before you started talking about the freelancers. You said you had a couple of bad experiences hiring analysts. What were those bad experiences? What went wrong?
To be honest, I mean, at the end of the day, one of the challenges of the industry and working with freelancers is the accountability and our ability to cross-reference, right? At the end of the day, you're looking for people and the quality output that you probably would get a bank or a consulting firm, but these guys are out of the system. And obviously, whenever you are engaging with a big consulting firm, you have a security on the doubt. So there is obviously the challenge to create these profiles. For us, we have obviously the ability to spot, but sometimes when you're like open to, you know, any application that can come by, you know, the curation is very, very, very important. And I believe we have become more strict at this after experiences of people that said that had a specific background and, you know, they couldn't prove it. So must be said, and it's common within the freelancing world, people who couldn't cut it, you know, could make it into top firms, but couldn't, you know, remain. The time they stay within the firm is a high red flag or yellow flag. So I would say this is something super relevant for us. And that's also one of the reasons, you know, once we have engaged with a freelancer that has worked well for a project, it's much likely that we're going to try to get him again in the future. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. It does. But was it difficult for you to also convince your management or your direct reports about hiring freelancers?
The thing is, we come from a freelancer management consulting background, right? So basically, we have created a model in which, let's say, we are the sponsors and we are managing any project for which we need support. So anybody that comes in is going to be somebody that is going to be reporting to us, and that probably eases the process. I think that it's a model that can work very well. In my experience, you know, many firms like us would probably been engaging over and over and over and going through a crazy management consulting fees. And what we have created is a hybrid model in which you have a small internalized team that can engage on demand or a project basis with experts on the industry or with people with the ability to deliver. And we can do that in a much more flexible way, but also with a very reasonable cost for the organization versus traditional, you know, getting a team of four McKinsey's that and are charging you in the millions per month, right?
One concern that often hear when departments want to hire freelancers is the wrap-up time of the onboarding. So how do you tackle that? How do you onboard freelancers?
It depends again on the sort of project. And again, as I said before, we've come to a point in which we have these two very strong approaches, right? Either we're getting an expert, we're getting somebody that is going to be input in the process. Like we have a very specific demands for the analysis and the sort of things that we want to create. That's on the second. For the first case, I guess it's much more flexible and it depends on the time. And in this case, probably what we're going to do is we're going to support above and below. We want an expert. So it's going to have some break management that is going to be probably led by us. And we're going to support him with some analytical power through some analysts of the team. So he can, you know, deliver his expertise. Because if you bring a freelancer, particularly somebody that is an expert in the industry, that can create a lot of noise because it's about the ways of working, templates. It's always difficult. Within a consulting firm, if you're doing a project, you're going to have like the partner who's going to be engaging at high level. You're going to have a manager who's going to, and you're going to have the associate. And now you're launching him into the organization and that's not going to work out. So here, what we do is that setting, that support above one of the team, then also the analytical below. And I think that has worked very well. And for more support for transactions, the other profile that we were discussing, I think that we have created methodologies, but still it's always a challenge. But I mean, say for a freelancer or for a consulting firm, the only difference in a big firm is that they are much more used to the processes and they have several points of contact across the organization to enable that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting point that you mentioned also with the noise in between your regular employees and the freelancers. But
yeah,
when you're talking about freelance analysts, so before we have the architects and the carpenters, so architects being more the industry-specific experts, whereas carpenters being more the analysts that can't do the hands-on job. How is the skill set for a freelance analyst different from in-house analysts? Because some of it is also about availability. You have a project coming in, you need to have someone yesterday, and then the freelance often makes more sense because you know you've worked with them before, they could just get started right away. But is there a certain different skill set? Is there a difference in experience needed between the freelance analyst and the in-house analyst?
This is probably limited to my experience, but my experience has been very difficult. And I think it's one of the challenges of the industry to hire freelance analysts, at least at the freelance price. The price that the standard analyst is expecting to be paid to be freelance, make it worse for him to be freelance, doesn't make that much sense to me because I can, you know, hire junior people. In my experience, there is not that many analysts, junior analysts in the market that you can leverage. I've seen it more from associate and above, or people with probably junior analysts, but at a completely unreasonable price.
From my experience with the clients that we talk to, I generally would agree, but I also think that it really depends on how the entire structure is set up. So for example, we have actually clients that are hiring specifically analysts at mostly then doing all the groundwork, all the legwork, so that they don't have to do it. Why would you not go for a very junior person? Because you would either go then for an intern or the onboarding of someone where you have to educate that analyst. It also takes time, right?
I know. I'm aware there are senior analysts, which would be a very interesting profile. Those are in the market. This Spanish market has the most sick profile. Everybody wants a young guy with a girl with some experience that can do his Excel and can do his work, but at the same time, you know, still has all the eagerness to work and at the same time. So there are a difficult profile fight in my experience. Yeah.
You just also mentioned, and you kind of mentioned that again just now, is that you also train analysts yourself, that you have entry-level analysts and you train yourself. What kind of profile are you looking for? Because I understand you yourself have a law background, right? So do you just go for a traditional MBA kind of candidate that you train yourself?
I would say to the traditional undergrad, I go for the same profiles that Bain goes. That's it. And so basically we have a good deal of experience of guys that want to break into management consulting. And they didn't go right away after school for many reasons. Probably they went first to tech and then after tech, they went to do management consulting and they see this opportunity. So that sort of profile that has worked very well for us in the past. Obviously they rotate because eventually they get hired at the big firms. And we're happy to do that because, you know, it's a model that works very well for us. It enables us in hiring top talent, which is something super mandatory for the sort of work we do.
Yeah. Has the process of freelance hiring become easier for you because you've been a freelancer yourself?
I would say so. Yeah, I think that we have the experience to understand the challenges we know very well why we're hiring freelancer away. And that's something I think very important. Because, you know, it's not by accident that we leverage on this, and we have also leveraged on big consulting firms and other stuff. So for very specific projects, also one of the reasons we hired freelancers is because the span of the activities that we cover has probably grown, and we found this flexible way to work on demand. I think that's the key, is that when we are very, I would say, underwater because the team is overwhelmed, we have the methodologies to jump in people if they have the proper skill set. That is the first thing to validate.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think if I summarize what you just said, I think there's a couple of success factors why it really works for a company. And the first thing is really that you have a clear goal in mind with your freelancer. So you really hire for roles that you know you need to fill. So it's a really clear and defined frame. The second that you mentioned that I found really interesting is that you have a pool of freelancers to tap into that you already worked with. So if someone has business with Spectre in the past, you also pull them in again for your projects. And then something I find very undermentioned is that your team is used to this hybrid approach. You're not bringing in just someone from the outside that is just going rapid and doing stuff with their own processes, but the team is used to it and there's clear problems in mind. So everyone on the team knows how to work with them. And I think that's very, very underappreciated because, you know, if you get someone in as analyst from the outside, they have their own processes and just one person on the team doesn't vibe with it because if they haven't done it before, then the whole project can go down. So I think that's a very interesting ecosystem you've created there. And yeah, to bring it to success. We often talk about how the freelancer has to bring a certain skill set and they have to have done certain things before, but I think it's undervalued that there has to also be ecosystem in the company that actually brings in
deals. Completely. I think that it's about the flexibility, or the ability to plug in, plug out, because all the work in creating those methodologies, also the credibility of, and this is something that has to be built up in any organization, but the credibility of past performance in different projects. So we have a very project-based approach where we get freelancers. A project comes up, then the first thing is, do we have the expertise or not? That's the first question.
Yeah.
Second is, do we have the bandwidth or not? And is it this as relevant that it must be done and we don't have the bandwidth? If we have the expertise but not bandwidth, we're going to bring somebody else that, you know, whose skill set fits with the project. If we lack both the expertise and the timing, then the question is, which kind of support from the outside do we require for this? Is this something so complex or which we require a very high level buy-in from the top management, or which we require engagement with other companies, public entities, etc., that requires that we bring some of the big guys? Or is this something that somebody has done in the past and can help us out? And is this something that we're talking about a senior person that probably has the knowledge but not the methodology of project-based work? Those are the sort of questions that when a project comes into our hands, we ask ourselves. Depending on the answer, that we're going to be going for a freelancer, we're going to be going for other sort of external support, or we're going to do it ourselves.
Awesome, Valentin. I think that's going to be a checklist we have to print out. Thank you so much for your time. That was intensely valuable, and we'll probably talk again soon.